Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
On December 9th, 1981, federal officers swooped into a number of local establishments in Beaverton, Oregon. While a few of the locations were bars and lodges, the main focus seemed to be a number of video game arcades. Witnesses were said to have reported seeing the FBI agents flooding into these dens of digital entertainment and removing a number of arcade cabinets, which they loaded onto waiting trucks and then were shipped off to undisclosed locations. Shortly before the flood of federal activity, news stories had appeared in local newspapers that focused on a number of children who were afflicted by an onset of mental and physical maladies while playing certain arcade games. Headaches, disorientation, vomiting were just some of the symptoms they were reported to have suffered. Decades later, an arcade museum website would upload a listing for an obscure video game which was said to have been the center of all the reports of strange activity. This case file joined the theorists as they grabbed their joysticks and cram quarters into the slot of Polybius, the deadliest arcade game.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 266. Polybius, the video game that never existed, or did it?
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Did you say Polybius?
Wait, you didn't like that?
You say Polybius?
No, Polybius.
I thought you said Polybius.
Polybius. No,
I thought basically you were spoiling the entire show within the title.
What?
Yeah, I was like, fucking.
How nice! I didn't spoil shit.
It should have been like Polybius, the world's most deadliest game.
Oh, okay, yeah. Polybius, the world's most dangerous video game.
It's better.
Polybius. Can games kill?
If games could kill,
they'd be Polybius.
They'd be Polybius.
Yeah. Or there's probably like two or three other ones that probably actually hold that title.
Perhaps a couple others.
Maybe a few more, but not as infamous
as Polybius.
No. So if you guys were to train a cadre of intergalactic space warriors, what would probably be the best way to do that, do you think?
To train
some
them?
Cadres? What?
Yeah, cadre. Like a squad.
Limited into Hispanics? Yeah. Why? Cheap labor? Is that what you're insinuating, Dan?
Or Cotter. Like, it might be Cotter. Might be Cotter.
Welcome back, Carter.
Wait, what would be the best way to train an intergalactic squad of assassins?
What are you saying? Intergalactic squad of, you know, space warriors.
Space like warriors.
Everybody know. I've seen The Last Starfighter. You fucking plan a video game in a convenience store, and whoever gets the high score, that's the guy you need.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Common sense.
VR baby, like Ender's Game.
And everybody has also seen the, you know, there was the one article about the Oculus developer, the one guy who. One of the top, like, what in the fuck is going on? It's the popo.
Bad boys. The what Dream you gonna Police. Do? What you gonna do when it comes for
Polybius? I don't know why.
What's up with your setup there? Is that the Dream Police?
Yeah, almost. I was I was fucking around early trying to make hotkeys for lights. And I didn't get it set up and I boxed it.
So instead of hot keys, you got hot cops is what you're saying.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. It just went right to Dream Police. I was like, oh.
How about that?
I've lost my train of thought.
Oblivious. The game that killed 100
Oblivious.
People.
Oblivious. So around February 6th of 2000, there popped up a listing on a website called coinop.org, which is a digital museum, also a database of arcade gaming. Now, I will admit that I spent quite a few
Dad made
years,
the site.
Like,
Dad made the site, I think.
No, I did not make the site, but I have spent a good chunk of my youth in the local arcades, like where I live. I probably... You know, I don't think I set any high scores, but yeah, I am very familiar with the arcade scene, and I think it is something that is I feel nostalgic for it, especially for this case file, because the arcade was like super cool back in the day. You know, like you're getting the coins or tokens. You know, it used to be quarters, then they moved to tokens.
Smelling
and
the
all
piss,
that stuff.
Fuck it, the piss smell in the carpets.
Like, well, it didn't smell like that. It was back when they were fresh,
no.
They were new.
When we were,
I knew they're grody now, but back then they were like. It was neat. There's just all the flashing lights. I mean, it was basically a casino for kids.
Well,
like,
yeah, it's Kid exactly. Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Kid Vegas.
And like back in the day, like you went there and everything was fucked tip top. Like it was balling.
You
like I remember
games.
Even our local
yeah,
Scandia
cool
stuff.
You had the Dragon's Lair, you had Raiden, you had the fucking Afterburner jet.
Afterburner was
like,
sick.
Every single fucking like mall on the West Coast had some sort of Playdium like arcade in it that mom could just drop you off. And it's like, all those went to the wayside. Those are gone. And like the few that are open, if you leave your kid unattended there, he's gonna grow up real fast.
you're gonna learn some lessons.
Well, yeah, you're gonna learn some lessons.
Dude, and fucking cops there looking for John Connor and stuff. It's a dangerous place.
And even when we're going to the arcade, that's at the tail end. That's not even the peak of the arcade. Arcade peak was like in the 80s. No.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we went to this place that was called Scandia in Kelowna, and it was like a mini golf arcade. It's still there. The arcade games they're not the same.
I don't know if that would be the peak, because I'd still argue probably like the peak was like back when like Mortal Kombat and...
Like mid-90s? Like,
yeah. So,
like, well, that's early 90s. 80s
Mortal Kombat
to 90s.
Came out in like 1990, 1991.
I'd say like, when did the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles come out? Movie.
The first
91,
yeah.
Probably
no,
early
90s.
Yeah,
or
1990, I think. We gotta look
at that. Yeah, I'd say the 90s. I'd still say
Turtles
the
90s
are still good.
Turtles of Time?
Great Turtles of Time, the X-Men cabinet game, the four-player X-Men cabinet game. Yeah, fuck yeah. Like, that was peak arcade.
What Legends?
What I came across was, like, the golden era was from the, like, mid-70s to mid-80s. It was called, like, the golden era of arcade, because that's before video games were really accessible in the home, right? It's before Super Nintendo and all.
We grew up with consoles, right?
Yeah.
Like, we were pretty lucky that way.
Because, like, so I went there. I still remember I used to play this game called Viper Phase 2. It's like a scrolling fighter, shooter. I set that fucking high score. Every time I went to Scandia, I'd make sure to try and get on the high score. I probably spent like
1942. That was a good game, too.
That was a good one, too. But yeah, I mean, those places were so fun. And now you go to the arcade, they're still fun, but now the games are all modern and it's like, I can play better games at home.
16 tokens to fucking play one game.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's exhausting.
So going back to February 6th, 2000, long past the golden age of the arcade, whichever way you look at it, if it's 90s or 80s, whatever.
They're on decline.
There was a page popped up for a game listed by the name of Polybius. This game had a copyright of 1981, and there was this single photo of an arcade cabinet, very just basic black arcade cabinet, and across the top in big, bold, you know, computer letters as Polybius. And in the description of this arcade game, there was a lot of interesting and strange little tidbits about the history of this game. So apparently the game popped up at some time in around 1981, and it took up residence in a few arcades around and in the suburbs of Portland, Oregon.
Most notably the Blue Diamond.
now, this original posting, I think Andrew told us that you have the actual original posting, right?
I do have the original posting. Buckle up, boys.
Hold on to your butts.
The OG posting came on August 3rd, 1998, which is like fucking, like, boys, I didn't even have the internet in 1998.
That's dial up.
Well, this is old. This is old, like, Usenet stuff. Like, this is like the 2000 is when it popped up on coinop.org. But this one that Andrew's talking about is like, this one was back before when it was like the dark web was the web. Like, it was still like, you know, just a loose connection of, So, this is some old stuff.
So this somebody's typing this up in the fucking computer lab in middle school. But anyway, so 1998, August 3rd, the username CyberYogi posted this on, Dan said it was an early version of CoinOp. Suddenly we received a request to design a game that was very odd. This would have been ignored normally, but supposedly this came from a secret organization called Xenoslotion. Operating with some of the government, with some sort of government clearance, which country we don't really know of, we were given a project sheet and a map of the human brain. And an instruction how to stimulate those areas and how to activate certain parts of the brain. Sega had a lot of money riding on this and we were not doing well. The game took quite a bit of time and we created technologies that were quite ahead of our time. One member of the group suggested that we name the game Polybius, which I remember being the name of a scholar of some sort. The game genre would be puzzler, but it was also, but it also had some other elements to it too. I assure you, this game was real. The game testers who worked for us had an odd mind for problems. People who played the game were having issues like losing their memory. They also had other symptoms like losing complete interest in playing games afterwards at all. I cannot remember what we designed the game case to look like because another group was responsible for that. After the project was finished, we signed what we would know now as an NDA, but we signed paper promising secrecy, and if I am discovered, I may be in serious trouble. However, I believe this to be... I believe this needs to be known. At the beginning of this page, I mentioned the Sega Genesis CD. I was involved in several other projects after Polybius and eventually I ended up on the Sega Genesis CD team. While we were designing this, an issue came up and involved two processors syncing up. It turns out Polybius was discovered to use two processors, work in a way similar to the Sega CD. We were afraid of getting into trouble for using that same code, but we altered the game's BIOS anyways. However, most of the code that activated the mind-altering system were in that BIOS. The actual game ROM needs that BIOS to run. It was very much a modern day console in that aspect. The point is, I believe we left quite a bit of the legacy code of the Polybius code in the Sega CD, at least the early versions. However, after we created the code for the Sega CD, I was shortly let go for misconduct. I have no idea why I was terminated and I was never contacted again by the company.
Ooh. Right. So this was an original posting by the CyberYogi, by that username. And it was describing the development of the game that was known as Polybius. So I'm pretty sure that posting was tracked down after the original post, like the February 6, 2000 kind of... you know, the February presentation of Polybius and listing on coinop.org on its little archive that this strange little black arcade case was responsible for things like for kids, you know, apparently affected kids that played it. And it was associated with things like amnesia or these kids like playing this game and becoming strangely addicted to it. And they would forget like where they lived or they would forget things like their names. In the little postings, it's remarked on about the design of the game itself being somewhat abstract for the time, being different from other games, being either a combination of either kind of like the vector type games that some people kind of remember where it's like you kind of move around the outside
and like but shoot also towards having the center
also having like a number of like flashing lights and strange geometric designs that would be presented to the player somehow.
Sorry to interrupt, Dan, but that's what the thing that you're bringing up right now, I had to look into, because one of the big infamous emphases in the research I did is the fact that this game offered both vector and raster technology.
Right.
Which is completely unheard of at this point in time. And like, to dumb it down, like from what I understand, is raster is like pixel technology.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas raster, they use some type of mathematical code. And like, I recognize that because that's actually the type of technology we use for ECGs at work. Right. So it's a more of like the straight lines, right? Everything's done in lines as opposed to like pixels. And the fact that they were able to mix both of these is absolutely unheard of for 1981.
81, because in like 85 is when the pixel stuff started taking over. But
and like Dan was saying with these symptoms, like Dan mentioned some, but I read some more nefarious stuff. Like kids are like having horrific nightmares after the fact. They were mentioned to having like seizures and attempted suicides after playing this game. And like, I don't know if you, like, have you guys ever heard of like reflex seizures before?
No.
So a lot of times like, to like, I guess layman's terms, like dumb it down a little bit. Like, you know, your occipital lobe in the back of your brain, that's where your visual input comes in. And a lot of times, like you've probably heard of somebody like seeing like a strobe light or like bright flashing lights or patterns or something like that causing someone to have a seizure.
Well, they put that in pretty much every video game now, is there's like a warning for that type of stuff.
Which is called a reflex seizure, right? Like it's basically you're overstimulating that part of the brain, which is causing the seizure, right? You can either have like a generalized seizure or a focal seizure. But those are other symptoms, Dan, that I read that took place while playing Polybius.
Another thing is like some people couldn't stop. And there was like sometimes like lineups for this game because it was new and so addictive that, you know, there was rumors of like, you know, you throw your quarter on, I'm next. And the guy just doesn't stop, like to the point where they're like, fist fights are breaking out, right?
It's my turn. Like, right, but that makes sense, right? Like you see a guy, you come into the arcade, you've been playing all day and you see this guy like camping on this machine. So right? You're going to be like, I want to try this shit, right?
You're standing behind him, you're tapping your watch.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't even matter. Like, especially if you're an arcade goer, like the second you like walk in, you're like, holy shit, what's that? Like, even if it like didn't look that great, you'd be like, I'll give it a try. It's new, right? Like, I want to see what it is.
Well, even
like, see what it's about.
Even like the title screen of the game, so it goes, is that it was actually bigger and more detailed than other games of the era. And at that time in the early 80s, like the RAM was super valuable and was used mainly for the games. So the title screen and all that was very basic, smaller fonts. When you get to like the mid 80s and Nintendo comes around and then they're putting the big titles. So this game, through all the internet rumors at least, seems to be farther ahead. Like the combination of both game styles, bigger font, which seems to use more RAM than was available at the time. And not only that, Andrew, what was the guy's name? The creator of Zeneslosion?
Zeneslosion.
The publisher, right? And that publisher made no other games on the record. And that name kind of translates to sensory deprivation or senseless in like German, rough translation. So if you're like, put those words on like Google Translate, it would give a translation, which probably not correct German, but that's kind of
that's what I understood from the, apparently it's like, it's two German words that are paired together that would not be paired together.
Yeah. It's not like, so it's not kind like of like, true
it seems
German.
Like a made up word.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, the actual gameplay is described to be something along the lines of like fast-paced action combined with puzzle elements, perhaps creating this kind of addictive gameplay that a lot is reported to have entranced a number of players into this game. With the coin op posting from 2000, there was information from a person who said that they were an actual operator and ran one of the arcades where the machine had been placed. Now, it's not unusual for, you know, games to come out and be placed in arcades and like small releases, like having a kind of game come out here. Yeah, a little video game testers being set out into arcades. So this was something that was not unusual.
Well, and I'd imagine too, like this is Portland, Oregon in the 80s. Like this isn't, this I would imagine is somewhat like of a small town at this time.
Well, small really, town, but it's not like the metropolis it is now, I'd imagine.
That's what I mean, right? Like, it's definitely not this major city center that you're planting these games in and hoping to get attention. Like, it definitely seems like they're putting it here to get some testing done, right? It's like a soft launch.
Yeah. Well, it's like the people who had like the reported cabinets of like Primal Rage 2.
Oh, it's a great fucking game.
Primal Rage, yeah. And then Primal Rage 2 was supposed to come out, and then they only put out a couple cabinets, and then it got canceled. That's a whole story.
Primal Rage was awesome.
That's a whole story.
Yeah, Primal Rage is a cool game.
1.1 million in Portland, 1981.
Oh, so it is a metropolis. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty big. It's like, it's still like a good city. So it's like, this was out in the suburbs though. So on the outskirts, kind of whatever of Portland, Oregon, but putting this game out there and this small release, this person who reported to have ran one of these arcades was talking about that there seemed to be some guys in quote, like guys in black coats who would reportedly come and they would collect information about the game and how it was played. They didn't care. They found it unusual that that these men would come in and they wouldn't be interested, reportedly. They weren't interested about, you know, how many quarters people were, how much money people were spending and how much whatever, but they were more interested in the behavior of the players before and after they had their gaming experience.
Sorry, did you say these guys were wearing black?
That's what they
black
said.
Suits.
Guys in black clothes.
Men in that's black, it. You would say.
And one of the things
men
I read
whom
is I like
are currently wearing black. Is yeah. What you're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
And one of the things that I had read was that, and when I was listening to some of the accounts, was that, you know, they would also like kind of stand and like keep watch on the building, right? Just peeking through the windows, like watching the machine as these lineups and stuff were queuing up around the Polybius machines. Right. So they were like actively watching, like coming and going, but at some cases they were just actively like
so you
staking out the location.
Yeah, like so routine surveillance on this arcade.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Sounds like they're looking at like more the behavior of how it's played rather than like how much money it's making or that kind of stuff.
So you had all of this activity happen within a month or so of Polybius, you know, coming on the scene reportedly in these couple of arcades. And then it's gone. It disappears. The cabinets are supposedly removed. All of them, all evidence of them actually being there was taken away. And it pretty much just disappeared for a time until you had that first kind of posting in 2000 that came out and brought everything back into the spotlight about these strange rumors about this game that supposedly had these really strange effects on a bunch of kids.
Wow.
Now, if people who are familiar with the arcade scene and people who are familiar with gaming, we mentioned ROM, you know, read-only memory, stuff like the core programming of video games. And most people know on the internet now, you can find a lot of ROMs of things. I used to have one on my laptop. I used to have a MAME, a multi-arcade whatever. I mean, you could download the ROMs for, you know, old arcade games.
Like 10,000 games on this.
Yeah, you could put them all on there and you could, you know, people do it now. It's almost like it's a form of preservation. Like some of these games, like they're gone. Like they're all of their
original,
all the cabinets are gone. The originals are gone. You're not going to be able to find them except for in these archives and some of these things. So a supposed ROM of the game actually turned up in 2004. And when you run it, people apparently ran it on their computer, downloaded it and ran it through an emulator or whatever. It prompts the user with a warning saying that, you know, playing this game could possibly cause memory loss or epileptic seizures. And but, so people
maybe that warning in 2004 was, I'm a pretty avid gamer and it's hard to remember when I first started seeing those warnings, but it's like, they're pretty standard on any game now.
On every game pretty much now.
Yeah. Right. Is this unusual in 2004? Maybe.
Is that like with that, I remember the big FDA warning.
You just click right through it.
That's on?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, okay. I see them a lot now. So maybe, yeah, it is not that unusual to see that these days, and put that warning in there is just a general precaution.
It's just general,
But this was something that, you know, people ran this game to figure out.
It's equivalent to before people started getting burned and suing for hot coffee, and then they put hot on the coffee.
Hot chowed on everything.
Oh, you chod. You mean chod.
Hot chod.
Now they just put like, this may cause a seizure on every game. Even if it's not, you don't actually read it. If you would look at the fine print or like actually go into the details, be like, this game may cause seizures in a very small percentage of people.
Yeah, but you're better off to put that than
not put it. Yeah.
And then, you know, you're playing NHL and you have a seizure and get sued. Or someone sues you and you're like...
So if people accepted, you know, they pressed okay. They ran the actual ROM itself. The Polybius logo from the original arcade picture photo of the arcade cabinet on coinop.org like runs across the screen, and people kind of start playing, and then nothing. Except that sound.
Yeah.
Good Foley work. Right?
Yeah, because that's the error message that pops up and says, April Fools.
April Fool's, yeah. please send this to a friend. Something like that.
By 2004, Polybius had kind of it had already kind of generated its own mystique, its own legend, its own lore within the short years of when it had originally, you know, when the original post had popped up on coinop.org. And it is this, all of these things that we said and we mentioned that were reportedly associated with Polybius became part of just this legend and people trying to uncover the true history of Polybius. So if you break it down, if we want to break it down, like we did the Sinus Lotion, is a translation, seems to translate into something like a sensory deprivation or senseless or something like that. Yeah, if senseless. You break down Polybius, the name of the game, is actually taken from a Greek historian who was actually born in Megalopolis, Arcadia.
He lived during the Hellenistic era, if I remember.
Those dirty Arcadians.
Right. And he's actually well known within historical circles because he was one of the people who is the main sources for the history of the rise of the Roman Empire. And he actually was one of the few people at the time who were proponents of using of factual integrity of records and was a very big fan of using firsthand accounts when actually putting down records, which was something that was at that time was revolutionary. Like people didn't really think of that. You just take stuff as it said and then just kind of just go. Like somebody told me, and then you just put it down on paper and that's what happened.
He's like, let's have the first person who saw it write it down.
Yeah, let's not play the fucking telephone game.
Not your sister's friend's cousin's uncle.
No, listen. I was there. He did not turn water to wine.
I was there.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah. So every account was taken from Jesse Ventura. If it's not taken from Jesse Ventura, then okay.
Torture.
Polybius also was a student of cryptography, and his name is actually lent to a type of cipher, which is the Polybian cipher, Polybian square, which is basically replacing letters of the alphabet with numbers, like in a little grid fashion.
And
you can kind of put it all together.
So he was the ancient. Codes. He was the ancient Greek fucking zodiac. Polybius is the zodiac.
Yes, somebody who lived.
That's up to me. The original Zodiac. I
call it. Yeah, a Greek historian from
done.
Yeah. Yes. So we solved two cases almost. The mystery. Zodiac. We solved the Zodiac case, but we still have the mystery of Polybius as to whether it is actually real or not. And the interesting thing is that people aren't sure as to whether Polybius was a real thing if the game actually existed. Now, the one piece of photo evidence that we do have is that picture of the original black cabinet that runs across the top, Polybius, that is on the original coinop.org. And people, people who are arcade historians and people who preserve arcades, which is not unusual, have looked at this. And even they're not quite sure whether it is perhaps it could have been photoshopped. It is a low res photo of this actual cabinet. And so people are not sure whether maybe it could be, it could have been photoshopped, but also when they look at it, they say that there's a lot of elements to the design of the cabinet, which seem to be taken from different arcade games at the time, from different styles of arcade games, from, you know, the Midways, Midways, Nintendo's, what was the other one?
Atari.
Atari's and all of those.
You impressed me by saying Midway. All right. You didn't have to continue.
So we've got our own like fucking basic like arcade archaeologists.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, there's tens of people who do that. And it's like, we went to the one place when we were in LA. It's kind of like that, like the classic arcade places, except people have them in private collections. Right.
Yeah. I've been to Joysticks in Orlando. Like we've been where did we go in the last place we went there? In Austin, too.
Oh,
we
what was that place in Austin called?
Oh, shit. Right?
We played
that
arcades
place is
there.
That awesome.
No, right?
What was that place wicked. Called?
Cider
drunk
something.
Drunk on seltzers.
Cider.
Cidercade.
Cidercade. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So when we went, we didn't see a Polybius cabinet, and I doubt that you'll be able to find one anywhere except ones that have been built, like custom built, which I think people actually have done, you know, just based on the photos and trying to figure out. Because I was impressed by looking into this, that the detail that people have gone into analyzing that one photo of the actual cabinet, like right down to the coin slots, like right going right into there and being like, these ones like you wouldn't normally find on these types of arcade games that you had at the time.
It's a tough time because photo resolution was so fucking garbage. And also photoshopping was so garbage that it's like it's just all hot garbage. So you're like, I can't really tell anyway. There's so few pixels to look at here.
So Dan, we're about to get into Michael Lopez here really quick, but before we do that, I think we should touch on the second entry in what is it, CoinOp. We should touch on that, but do you boys want to do that after the fucking beer break, or you want to get right into it? Because this is long.
It's long. Well, if it's long, then we're going to take a short break.
Let's take a short break. Come right
back.
Look, are you like Dan, and you got a trip to Thailand coming up, and you want to impress the locals? Well, then you want Rosetta Stone. It's been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 different languages offered. It's got fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. Rosetta Stone has amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
Sure, there's competitors to Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta Stone offers more languages and a lifetime membership. You could go over to Babbel and get 60% off, but it's not for a lifetime. That's why we're promoting Rosetta Stone today. All right, Theorites, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Alien Theorist Theorizing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your damn life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today or look for the link in the show notes. Peace.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Where did we leave
where
off?
Where were we?
Andrew is about to get into a...
Drop some knowledge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get ready for some fucking mashed potato marbles here.
First time.
It's going to be great.
Fucking.
Don't worry, the word judiciary doesn't come up.
Hey, you nailed it there.
You
nailed
it.
It's because the pressure was off. Now I'm going to fuck all these words up. So we'll go back to CoinUp. Remember the website CoinUp?
Yeah,
we just talked about it. There's going to be another post on this CoinUp messaging board.
What?
One done by a Mr. Stephen Roach.
Stephen Roach.
His post goes, I think it's about time I laid this to rest. However entertaining the speculation, my name is Stephen Roach, who is primarily based in the Czech Republic. Zenoslotion was a company set up by myself and several other mainly amateur programmers in 1978 that worked on component parts for printed circuit boards that saw programming as a limited but very profitable sideline. I think the fact that it wasn't the focal point of our business took the pressure off, and hence we created some quality work, which quickly gained a reputation within the industry. We were approached around 1980 by a Southern American company that shall remain nameless for legal purposes to develop an idea that had for producing an arcade game with a puzzle element that centered around a new approach to video game graphics. They were very keen indeed to gain an upper hand in what was already a very competitive market. So we offered a staggering commission-based remuneration package. Remuneration. I looked at that word and I said, there's no fucking way I'm going to be able to say that properly.
Nailed it.
Fuck yeah. So a commission-based remuneration project to develop something special that utilized the technology. We developed the game in little more than two porta cabins. That's a word.
Porta cabin.
That were knocked together, where we spent many stressful mornings, evenings, and nights, We developed the game in a little more than two porta cabins that were knocked together, where we spent many stressful mornings, evenings, and nights, which was a great pity because it compromised our relaxed and innocently amateur approach to our business, in spite of the financial possibilities. Merrick Vassa.
Are we reading an ad here or what?
V A C H O U S E K.
People fucking roast me Merrick for not Vasuk. Being able to read.
Well, that's a hard fucking last name to say, you dipshit. It's not photography.
That's also true.
Fuck you.
He's got you there.
You know what? We're going to stop at his first name. Merrick was the programmer who came up with the name Polybius. He had studied Greek mythology at Merceric, fuck's sake, University, and came up with the name because it sounded quite bold and mysterious, which is what we wanted to portray simply. The inspired graphics combined the puzzle elements and gameplay that was something to behold. We play-tested it for hours, and it was certainly very addictive. It was well-loved professionally and recreationally with everyone who played it. The company couldn't have been happier, and we all thought we were on the verge of something very special indeed. We then received a phone call stating that there were concerns within the company that the basic graphics, which featured prominently in so many of other games of the time, were fine for the average gamer to spend hours at a time without any noticeable physical or mental detriments. But the intense and engrossing gameplay of this new step was very much unknown. So the game was put back several months due to divided opinions within the board directors. Much to our consternation for breaking our backs to finish on time, we received heartening, collated playtesting figures and were then told that the game would receive a temporary limited release, which buoyed us to significantly, but shortly after. That doesn't sound right. We received the terrible news. A 13-year-old boy from the Lloyd District of Portland, Oregon, had suffered an epileptic fit while playing the game, only six days after the machines had literally been installed. One of the senior employees that I knew very well contacted me to tell me that it caused immense ripples of panic throughout the company, who were of the opinion that they had created a monster. It may sound laughable now, but please bear in mind that this was 25 years ago when the video game industry was still in infancy. Every effort was made to withdraw the game from the public domain as quickly as possible. But the scaremongering was already out in full force, and a lot of the children were queuing up for or daring their friends to play the supposedly nightmarish game. Company directors descended on our town to assess the situation, which may account for the reports of strange men in black suits hanging around, and the machines were often taken in daylight, causing minor but noticeable incidents. As far as I was made aware, only 7 machines were distributed around the area, and no other health-related incidents were reported. I heard off the record that the company made a one-off settlement with the boy's family, and no one was heard apart from all the internet-based speculation and resulting in paranoia. We disbanded Zinnisloschen shortly afterwards because we didn't want to restrict ourselves to the stringent deadlines of the companies and favor distancing ourselves from the game in any case of any lingering recriminations, which could have gone a great deal or could have done a great deal of damage to our personal and professional lives. This was extremely important to us. As far as I'm aware, no ROMs or otherwise exist unless they remain in the bowels of the company that distributed it. We only received a basic...
Flip the page.
Pause for dramatic effect here. Basic payment in view of the fact that the game was withdrawn without nationwide or international distribution. So we grew to loathe it, and it was often a curse word whenever we used to meet up and still is today, which is a shame. I still believe we created something that should have changed the face of gaming and would have set us apart from the rest of the industry, but arcade games were often compared to drugs at the time because of their addictiveness, and we created something that small-minded bureaucrats perceived to be heroin of the video game world. That's only crime was to be many years ahead of its time. I'm sure people will doubt the sincerity of this and feel free to drop me a line at stephenroach@yahoo.com as I'm happy to answer any questions. Stephen. So you heard that. stephenroach@yahoo.com. Any questions? Hit this guy up.
Stephen Roach.
He was actually interviewed by a fucking legit reporter and did one on the record, supposedly.
I think you're talking about Stuart Brown of Ahoy, who did the documentary.
Brown.
Right. Yeah. He tracked down the person, the user who claimed to be Stephen Roach, and apparently asked him about his statements about Polybius, and was told that all of it is completely fabricated.
What?
That's a different one.
That's bullshit.
The guy that the interviewer that did interview him said he answered a bunch of questions and said it's legit. This is a real email as well. I emailed it just for shits and giggles, and the email didn't get bounced back.
So. I mean, yes, it could be a real email. Anybody can set up a real email.
It's a real email. I couldn't set up a real email. It's way above my pay grade.
I mean,
it's, my friend,
but you installed a hard drive. You can do an email.
Yeah, you can do anything you put your mind
to. True. The world's also
because this is mainly an audio podcast and people think that Andrew was just doing Foley work with the pages, like he didn't actually, like just two blank pages.
No.
Andrew prints out his notes physically so you can read them. So he can read them.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. I'm just and I want keeping in people me, in the know. You know? Making sure people understand.
Andrew doesn't print them out. A friend of his prints them out at work for him.
Oh yeah, on company dime.
Yeah.
I don't even have a printer.
Yeah. Let's be clear about that.
So as far as the documentary Polybius, the video game that doesn't exist by Stuart Brown is concerned, he said that he talked to this Stephen Roach, or the user that claimed to be Stephen Roach, and he said that this entire thing is fabricated. And for me, the one thing that sticks out about this whole the whole thing is when the guy talks about the games, he gives like he talks about Polybius, he gives that one short blurb about it was ahead of its time, it incorporated these elements, but he doesn't go into any specifics about the actual game. So that kind of
including the vector and raster technology.
Yeah, but that's it. But he doesn't describe the Polybius wording.
Like, even you look at the Polybius wording, that's like Dan, like, or sorry, like Zell said, like, they didn't put that effort into title screens. That is far above it. If that photo is real, that's like way above its time.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like, right? When we start to look this, like, I know we're like, there's reports of this not being true and the, you know, this person being fake. But like, as I start to read it, like, this strikes me as like, right away, I'm like, to be honest, after everything I read, I'm not convinced that this is not 100% a thing, because like, when you look at all like CIA operations that have gone down, like if you were to be like, add like, oh yeah, they also tried out their hand at mind control and doing subliminal messages in the early 80s with arcades in Portland, Oregon. Like, yeah, if you just say that by itself without looking at any of the other shit the CIA did, I'd be like, that's crazy. But then when you're what like, some of this other stuff, you know, with Midnight Climax and a bunch of other CIA operations that they've done on Americans and, you know, MKUltra and shit, dosing people, I start to think that maybe these people are telling the truth. It's just that this operation was compartmentalized, where they were like, they knew they were working on this. They knew they were working for this fucking, this company, but like, they didn't know that the overheading, like the overarching company was the CIA, right? So it's like, that would make sense.
What if I told you this was MKUltra 2.0?
Oh, I wouldn't even doubt it, right? I wouldn't even doubt it.
There's nothing to doubt. This is fact. The Bureau's records indicate that the agency was actually monitoring and subsequently raiding arcades in Portland, Oregon around this time. There's stories of players collapsing in arcades hit mainstream media in those days. Arcades, which were naturally dark and maze-like, had seedy reputations as hotbeds for gambling, drug activity, and pickpockets. Okay, so this was a place that was actively being monitored by the FBI at the time. Okay, the FBI had agents rigging classic cabinets like Tempest, Scramble, and Galaxian with cameras and microphones in hopes of catching criminals in the act. Games like Tempest were selected less for their mind control abilities and more because their cabinets featured glass bezels and was easier to hide cameras in. They were actively doing this already. This is real.
In these areas.
This is fucking fact. There is record of this.
So I wouldn't exactly say it's real. I'd just say that's the kernel of truth in this entire thing, is that it's one of the kernels of truth. Right. So
there's always a kernel of truth.
Yeah, that's how you make good urban legends.
But I'm saying, Dan, if
you would have told me about MKUltra being like, hey, there's a little bit of truth to this, probably we didn't know, but if we didn't have fact, I would feel the exact same way about this.
Yeah. And the thing with this one is, I'm like, it's one, like the thing that lines up for me, it's not like they're like, oh, Polybius was nationwide. They were, you know, it was in Portland, it was in New York, it was limited to one city, right? And that, like, that it kind of seems like it's targeted. That's some sort of like, you know, like, hey, that's your project. You're probably, you guys are doing the subliminal messaging in the arcade game where you're trying out, we're trying it out. We got six machines. We're going to fire out in Portland. We're going to see what the fuck happens. Let's try it out. We don't know what's going to happen.
Did they go international with their brothels in Midnight Climax, or did they just focus on a couple?
San Francisco. It was all San Francisco Bay Area, right?
So
I have an easier time.
You don't think they were running brothels in like Eastern and Western Germany, listen, and they were taking pictures of like.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. What I'm trying to say is the fact that I have an easier time digesting fucking Polybius than I do Midnight Climax, and I know Midnight Climax is for fact is a real thing.
I hear what you're saying.
Right. It does.
Think about that.
It does to me. It strikes as like not very far fetched to think that they were trying out. Right. And they'd have somebody be like, yeah, okay, well, we're working on some, maybe not mind control, but maybe they were trying to see if they could elicit these kind of responses in the youth, make them docile, whatever, with sound frequencies, flashing pictures, flashing images. They were trying to see if they could elicit these things that they could then use on other, you know, foreign countries.
Well, why not try it? Like all of a sudden in the 80s, you have this fucking phenomenon that comes out of nowhere. Right? Comes out of Japan. We have this fucking thing that's completely taking over our fucking children. Right? Like you said, there's fucking lineups at these places. Right? We go from Pong to fucking Tempest. Tempest was fucking wild.
Yeah.
Right? Like the technology upgrade, we have lineups. This is all these kids in the 80s wanted to do was go to fucking arcades. Of course the FBI is going to look into this and want to do something with it.
Yeah, and see what they could do. Like,
why not?
The FBI or the CIA?
I think it's CIA. I think FBI was maybe watching some criminals. But sure. I think if there was
NSA,
any kind of like,
CIA.
But there's no taking place.
No, you can say all the three letters making jokes, but like we know this kind of shit like, with the flashing lights.
I know for
lights
a fact
this
that the
is
FBI
CIA.
Was involved in the arcades with
yeah,
the cameras
I'm
trying
not
to
saying,
catch fucking...
Yeah, I'm not saying that the FBI was doing that. Surveilling, looking for criminals. Tapping the arcade games, look for CD characters. But I'm saying that if there was an agent, a three-letter agency putting up machines, testing them to see if they could elicit, subliminal messaging or induce seizures, that's the CIA. And study that outcome. That's well,
what about,
CIA
what
all
about
over.
The start? We talked about how sometimes you played this game and you didn't want to play video games anymore. Maybe they were trying to find a way, because video games are new. Like, they're a new thing. They're like, oh, they're making our next working class generation lazy because all they want to do is play video games. So, like, why not try and study it? Like, how can we, maybe can we squash this? Is this, because this, I don't think this is good for us. I don't think this is going to deviate from the plan. Let's squish these kids.
It's been mentioned several times that the people who played Polybius lost interest in playing video games at all after.
So, well, that's an interesting one because if, you know, there's some reports saying that they were, like, people were like zombified basically playing. Well, it's like maybe they were fucking around with frequencies to see. So then they're like, hey, listen, if we fucking put this technology in video games and send them to the youth over in, you know, our next foreign, you know, where in Japan, right? And then maybe that'll make all the, you know, the Japanese kids growing up this generation docile, right? Like maybe that's running through their mind, and that's why they're trying these different frequencies to see what kind of responses they elicit, right? Maybe this study, for however short it was, they got just a wide variety of test subjects and trying different frequencies to see what kind of elicited what.
I mean, aren't we, or like, don't we already see that with like military recruiting, like pumping out fucking Call of Duty and shit, basically? Dan's gonna correct me on this, but is it Yvonnet Niage? Remember that shit from The Simpsons?
The Simpsons. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Join the Navy? Like, maybe this is fucking propaganda.
It's not far off. There are accounts of, like, for example, Battlezone. Some people remember that. If you've been to a classic yep. arcade, you've probably played Battlezone, which is a tank simulator eventually.
Right?
It's pretty much considered the first person virtual reality game. Essentially, like, you sat down in a chair and, like, you had, like, a little thing. It was basically like you're a tank operator. Apparently, they modified a couple of those cabinets to actually mimic the M2 Bradley fighting vehicle in 1980, and they used it as a trainer for their for soldiers and to actually for gunners that would be operating on the Bradleys. So, and then in 1996, like the U.S. Marines actually ordered a modified version of Doom 2, and they wanted to train their ground troops on it for
to fight demons.
and even today, like I just saw the article the other day, like you know, virtual reality is being used, and even in China, like China's using it to train their soldiers in like in you know close quarters combat, indoor situations, and things like that. So it's not using video games to train people to do certain things is not all the way off. I mean, fuck, they train monkeys in Project X with Matthew Broderick.
Well, it's crazy
nukes.
because now like drone operators and stuff use either mouse and keyboard in some circumstances or an actual like Xbox or some type of gaming controller. Video games are now
weaponized.
Like, you can take a drone and you're completely removed from the like outcome of that drone strike because you're playing it from whatever how many miles away. You're not in the plane.
Because well, you're desensitized, right? You've been playing these games your entire life. You throw that control in your hand. It's you know, it's secondhand nature to you.
Yeah, you don't feel
all
the experience.
Let's go get that KD up, man.
There's books written on that, right? There's books that written on that over like, you know, they do war games and stuff and they think they're just games and stuff. And it turns out that
you mentioned Ender's Game.
Yeah, Ender's Game is a perfect example, right? They destroy the aliens.
Or toys with Robin Williams.
And yeah, and they think the whole time that it's it's all the trials leading up to the final fight, when really they were just obliterating this alien race the entire time, and they had no idea. And they did that so that you wouldn't have a conscious thought of, we're just murdering this race at all. It was a game. You were losing real soldiers and stuff.
Yeah, as far as training things like training simulators, yes, like video games have been used. It's documented, well documented to using them to train for certain situations. The whole thing about Polybius is that it usually hinges on that idea that video games like cause some type of physical harm to these kids, which is something that actually happened. Again, this is another kernel of truth in the whole Polybius legend lore, where you had at least a number of people, while you might see Polybius in the collections of urban legends that say like Polybius the deadliest game whatever, but yeah. It can be contested whether or not it's actually in reality it is, but it has been confirmed that there are actually games that may have killed people. Like you had Michael Lopez of Beaverton, Oregon, who actually suffered a sudden severe migraine while playing Tempest with some friends at the Malibu Grand Prix arcade. He actually, the migraine was so severe, like in his words, he collapsed on someone's lawn four blocks from his house and was rolling around screaming in pain from this. He felt like felt like his head was cracking open.
That's how I used to feel playing COD 2.
I was just going to say, I had the same symptoms for playing Ghost and Ghoul.
Had Jeff Daly, who is an avid video gamer, apparently, who suffered an actual heart attack and died after getting his name on the high score of the game Berserk. Which there was another case with Berserk. So I think Berserk, this game Berserk, spelled with a Z, is probably holds the title for the deadliest game because it killed two people. It killed Jeff Daly and Peter Bukowski. They died. Peter Bukowski died of heart failure, apparently possibly due to a myocardial inflammation while playing this game.
Did he get the vaccine?
I mean, they didn't have COVID. He probably got a polio vaccine, probably.
Every person who dies got the vaccine, and it's because of the vaccine.
Every person, man.
The first thing you read in comments is that's what it is. It doesn't matter what the death was.
Like, do we know what they mean by like myocardial inflammation, like a pericarditis, or like?
I think he was already had like a kind of condition, like he already was,
and it was probably brought on
comorbidities.
Because there's been more. I mean, there's probably been many deaths not directly caused by games, but because people play the game for so long without food, too much caffeine, right. Not enough water.
Yeah, there was a guy who did World of Warcraft and he died.
Played for five days straight.
Well, I mean, there's Brian Morrow, who's also included in this. He played 28 straight hours of Asteroids and pretty much just drank Coca-Cola the entire time and then got sick,
shut down,
collapsed.
Surprise!
Who wants to do anything for that long?
Well, it's crazy because video games too are, after a certain amount of time, if you don't like replenish yourself, you just start playing bad. You get worse and worse. Your games get worse and worse. Like you suck.
Yeah, well, hey, take it for somebody who sucks from the minute they press.
Some people suck
play.
From the minute they start
it's
aiming.
It's exhausting. Shit's exhausting.
Some people get dizzy playing on Xbox. One of the members of this podcast can't do shooters.
What are you talking about? I play, what's that game called?
I don't know.
Fuck. What's that one where you drop in with a parachute?
Fortnite?
By yourself?
It's a couple of those.
Call of Duty? Warzone?
PUBG.
No, give me another
Warzone?
One. PUBG.
Oh, PUBG.
I played PUBGs with both you motherfuckers and I was the last guy alive.
Once.
I was out there kneecapping guys.
One time. Andrew won the game.
One time. And it was on a stream, I think, one time where we were losing our mind.
Shot someone and...
Yeah.
I killed like five guys.
There must have been some latency issues across the...
I couldn't figure out how to uncrouch, so I was kneecapping everybody. It was awesome. Riding a dirt bike.
It was an odd job.
Hey, that's realistic. That's where I'd be shooting from real life. Gotta keep it real.
So as far as the legend of Polybius is concerned, like most of the stuff has been kind of checked out. Like
100% real.
Sure. It's 100% real.
Without a doubt.
Yep.
100%.
Yep.
Without a doubt.
Well,
theory of the week?
I straight up think I'm like, I don't think like when I send this and you know, you'll read articles and stuff that's like, oh, this is a hoax and it's brought up. But like the parts for me where I'm like, is it that far-fetched to think that there might have been some sort of government agency running some sort of test on seven machines in Portland, Oregon? Like that's so specific of a hoax, which would make it unbelievably good because I'm like, you could have done anything with that. But the fact that it was so specific, I'm like, it's for me, not like Andrew said, it's not that hard to believe. Like it's not at all. I don't think it's a stretch to say that maybe we just don't have enough FOIA, you know, requests in for this kind of stuff that some sort of operation like this operation.
Can you Polybius, send me the original cabinet of the game? Yeah.
Well, even if we found out like what the operation name was and it came out in a FOIA request in 15 years that we found out that this urban legend, you know, was a true CIA test where they were trying flashing lights and frequencies on people. Would any of you three be shocked?
I'm not shocked at anything anymore.
Right? So it's just one of those things for me where I'm like, you know, some people claim this is a hoax, but I'm like, you know, is it though? Are we sure it is? Or are we just saying that because we don't have enough information on, because it's so limited on these six or seven machines in a
area. This is what it all comes down to, is they said they had the ROM, but they never reproduced the actual game ever. Even though they had it. It's never been reproduced. There's been people who make the fake game, like we said, the April Fool's joke.
There's actually been some pretty good ones from what I've heard. Like there's people been, who have gone into
they've remade made, it. Like, right, they've made a game where they're like,
or this made their own version of what they, their yeah. own fan-made interpretations of what Polybius
might
have been.
Everybody knows the real version of that ROM got burned up in the fucking in Mordor. Nobody wants to play that game. Get rid of it.
Yeah, but that was a burn after reading for sure.
Yeah,
but yeah, well, so after like looking into it and watching the documentary, but I think it's on what's the YouTube channel? It's called the Polybius, the game that doesn't exist. It's on Ahoy. If you want to look it up, I watched that. And at the end of it, like, okay, if they made only a handful of games and they, let's say they took them away and it was a government, some type of program to research how these certain visuals and frequencies affected the player. Sure. I mean, stranger things have been done through drugging people without their knowledge. And,
yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of crazy shit that happened. However, someone had to make that game and it would have, at the time, like this was like leading edge. Like this is new. So there have been a lot of people that work on that game. No one's ever come forward. It's like, oh, this is what it was, blah, blah, blah. So when I worked on it.
We got
first guy.
We got Mr. Roach. But Cyber.
That's what I mean. Mr. Roach, yeah. Who doesn't go into any specific details about
no details,
what the game
no game. Because if the guy said they had the ROM.
After he wrote that, they're like, we got to take it.
No, after they killed him and he talked to that reporter that you said that he talked to.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying I agree right. that I wouldn't be surprised if the that. Game was real. I wouldn't be surprised. But without the game or any actual video or anything of the game, it's really hard to say what the game even was. But I totally agree. I wouldn't be surprised. I would not one bit if they're like, there was this game actually. We were experimenting on the minds of the youth to see how they would respond to the shit.
You're like, yeah, it's not... The whole idea about playing a video game that could kill you is not something that has been around since as long as there's... Yeah, it's been around since there's been arcade games and like it's been portrayed in movies. We talked about the, you know, kind of Last Starfighter, Tron, that one with Emilio Estevez, the Nightmare.
Yeah,
Battle Nightmare. Of Misha.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
That anthology, like it's in there. And like it's still happening today. Like they're still making
was
new...
There, like, there was a movie in the 90s called Arcade. That right, was basically yeah. the exact same fucking
yeah,
premise.
It, when arcades became like the settings for like horror movies, like it's just, yeah, it's always that about like some kind of game that has a secret level that you play enough and you get to it. And
I will say though, Dan, it did appear in a Simpsons episode.
It did.
Which means it's got to be true.
Well, I mean, in pop culture, Polybius has popped into a lot. It's like it was in yeah. Loki with Disney Plus. There was an arcade in like Loki's lair.
But it was in the Simpsons.
It was in the Simpsons. Then it was true. Then it's true. We all know this.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
But it's true. Again, like it's just one of those things where it's like, and how many people like legit, it'd be so easy for these agencies to discredit like people coming forward and being like these two people would be like, because it's so isolated. There's only six or seven machines. There was four or five. Like, I feel like it would be so easy to like throw in some misinformation. If maybe that's not even the name of the game wasn't Polybius, right? But if the nugget of truth was there was a game that the CIA released, maybe the game was no good, but they were just testing these kind of things. It would be so easy for them to throw like some misinformation out there to get just everyone completely off course with what they were doing. And to be honest, like if you look at some of the other shit the CIA's done to American citizens, this would be on the low scale.
The lowest.
This would be on the low end low of end. Like problematic stories to come out for the CIA.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool concept though. The game that can control your mind, wipe your mind, possibly kill. Maybe they never stopped. You know, there's been a lot of different games over the years. Some people now, they've perfected. Maybe it wasn't even a malicious thing by the government. Maybe it was just actually for money. Like, what makes a game addictive? What turns people off from a game? What makes, if you play this game.
It just seems like marketing research, like they've been doing that for decades.
That's what I mean, but they did figure it out. Yeah. So this game, let's just say like all the knowledge to that point has been based on, we're going to make this game, we're going to see how people react, and we're going to base that. And now we get to games like Fortnite, which actually was just sued for like hundreds of millions of dollars for being addictive and pretty much youth gambling is what it was.
Yeah.
Well, they're being purposely, like, what was it, one event saying that their UI is purposely...
It's misleading, like, it makes confusing. You buy shit, you can't refund it.
They do have a stupid UI, I agree with that.
But they just were sued for hundreds of millions of dollars because the game is so successful because it's like dialed it in, it's got it nailed. What makes people tick? What's going to make people buy?
It's like the whole thing, if you watch any documentary on anything like the apps, like the Raid Shadow Legends or whatever, and like those things, like how these apps are designed to be, these gaming apps are designed to be optimized for triggering all of the
everything,
all of the parts of your mind that are associated with gambling, like all of the pleasure receptors, everything. All of that stuff, all the dopamine that fits in, triggering.
That fits in with Cyber Yogi, where he says we had the map of the brain and all the fucking areas, like all the sensory receptors that we wanted to hit in the different parts of the brain.
Yeah, it really does.
Hey, I mean, they've got to figure it out now. People fucking play these games for fucking 40, 50, 60 hours a week, man.
Here's the trick to it, though. You want to know how to beat that? Just be terrible at them. You don't want to play them.
Just be really bad.
It's really bad.
But you know what, though? You know what, though? Realistically, we're not far off of some sort of future where, like, long-haul truck drivers are driving from VR from home.
There are people who play hundreds of hours of Euro Truck Simulator.
Yeah. Like, full time.
Weird amount of people who play that for a long time.
Dude, are we talking like fucking cross country Canada?
Yes. Real life. Yes. They think they're long haul truckers.
Game sucks.
And they play that game, right?
Hundreds of hours.
Just go be a trucker and get paid.
Being truckers fucking sucks. But soon.
So there's no piss jugs involved. That's why. Fucking rest stop prostitutes. So that's a downside.
It's really a lose-lose.
Yeah, but you could put in an order to, you guys come right to your house. You don't have to fucking do truck stop. You got your own nice bed. You got your own house.
Yeah. But I don't think we're far off from that.
No, they're not, because the whole thing about like
never get them out.
The whole thing about now we have 5G internet. We have Starlink. We have internet that operates on very, very low latency, like sub 20 milliseconds. So if the machinery on the other end is good enough and you can control it, like say you have like these two VR remotes, they're doing surgeries now. That's like the next thing. Like, you can do surgeries. So if there's a...
I would play that game. That's fucking cool.
It's not a game. There's not a real person. It's a robot, but you're controlling...
You're doing VR operation on real people?
Yeah, so if there's a conflict or there's a place with not enough medical...
That's not okay. Zell. Oi. Like, you hit the sides, you don't get the buzzer like the fucking game.
I think they've
already done it at least once, I think. Because you have an actual surgeon doing it from across the country and being like in, just using the little beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, the only thing that's holding it back now is that the robot is not as precise as the person controlling it yet. So is,
yeah, that's enough for me to be like, nah, I'm good.
No, but it's,
yeah,
but in another five, in a 10, couple 20, years. Well, let's say 20 years from now, the robot is so precise, it operates, it does exactly what you do within like, say, 10 milliseconds, which is not, it's not not noticeable. Oh, you never buddy, will notice it.
With, so express with, surgeries.
With AI, with AI, what we got going on, I mean, the second AI gets as good as us, it's better than us because it's not going to take long at all for it to surpass doing the same surgery by itself, perfected.
I think they already had one that already, like, it was just a, it was a really general, like, easy surgery.
It's not but brain surgery or anything, yeah.
Right, they're doing that something. That's what I want to know. Fuck that.
Yeah,
no, something that was done just like, I don't know, they probably, it was probably in the United States, and they probably said, hey, we're going to charge you like fucking, half the price. And they're like, yeah.
I want fucking
I'll take it.
T-1000 doing my appendectomy thing.
We're going to charge you $30,000 instead of $60,000. Cool, thanks.
Anyways, I don't know how we got onto that topic of robot virtual surgeries.
But basically, what we're trying to tell you is Polybius is 1,000% real.
This could be, it's real.
It's real.
Boom.
It's real as it gets.
There's,
if you have
honestly, a,
if
you're from I'm Portland, leaning towards it, I'm believing.
If you're from Portland and you went to one of these arcades back in the early 80s and you played
and you've seen it.
And you've seen it. You must let us know. Especially
because
if
realistically, if we're looking for eyewitness accounts of Polybius, maybe a couple hundred people, maybe in the short span that this thing allegedly existed.
Well, probably more than existed. That. If it's multiple arcades over a month, it might be 1,000 or more. But there's a relatively very few people who actually played the game if it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was you,
just seems weird that like if these things you had these medical conditions that it triggered, like there's no. It'd be like a medical record of it. Like these kids,
well,
like they didn't cart these kids away off to some FBI black site to be like, treat them and be like, okay.
Well, a lot of times like reflex seizures, that's a very normal occurrence in children and you grow out of it.
Right.
Like but it's like, we do, I mean, we have the documented cases about other arcade games, like causing it, like, or, you know, being associated
maybe
with these. Those were
the
big
first.
News. Those
but
were
maybe
big
this
news.
Was the first time that we had a game that actually affected people in that way. And that's why we had this like extreme response being like, we need to pull these all now because we don't know why the fuck this happened.
Yeah, maybe they just weren't sure or something.
Well, this is 1981. This is the first time they're introducing new technology. All of a sudden we have the first documented seizure caused by, like induced by a video game by supposedly this new technology. Let's pull these. Kind of makes sense to me.
Boom. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a cool concept, if nonetheless, the game.
I mean, if you got any questions, Stephen R. Roach at Yahoo.
Yeah, light him up. Light that motherfucker up.
Yeah, he'll let you know.
I'm just going to attribute the whole thing to it was a secret training program for starfighters. And we won the war, and that's what triggered the decline of the arcades, is that we won the Intergalactic War already, and we're good. So don't
need
them anymore.
Champions is what you're saying.
We are the champions.
I can tell you what, I am not the last starfighter. Yeah. We would be fucked.
Anyways, yes, if you like that concept of, you know, mind control and government programs, check out Case File 84 if you have not already, which was MKUltra, and Case File 138, which was COINTELPRO, where they infiltrated a bunch of American groups to try and sway the view of the people.
Didn't we have another one that was just like that?
If you feel so inclined as to support this show and help us continue doing what we do, you can head to our Patreon for as little as $5 a month. You get access to all our bonus content, including, Operation Midnight Climax, where the CIA took over San Francisco brothels and blackmailed American civilians and dosed them with drugs.
No big deal. And then,
or even Operation Sea Spray, where they sprayed, what was it, Dan? Some sort of bacterial spray to see how it would roll in with the fog. And they actually killed people with like urinary tract infections. No big deal.
Urosepsis. That's a real thing. UTI, urosepsis, dead.
100% real. And I mean, we have tons of Operation Gladios, tons of other CIA knowledge that they don't want you to know about, all on our Patreon.
Hell yeah. And to get there, it's easy. You just go to alientheorist.com. You hit support. You choose Patreon. You choose the Supercast. All of the episodes show up for you on your podcast feed, ad early and ad free. And you also Get your name cemented in ATT history by being read live on the show. Woo. Woo. This week's new supporters, we got Devin Telly, Kyle Scutian goes up in their pledge, Steen, the hot dog god. What makes you a hot dog god? Like, eat a lot of hot dogs?
I would consider you a hot dog god. You were eating little links out of a can right out of the water.
I thought you were going to say that because he's got the biggest hot dog.
And moving on to Paul Bernard. Butt Pirate Cass.
That guy's in your band, isn't he?
He might be.
I think that's your singer.
He might be the singer. Trent DeGioia. DeGioia? I'm going to go with that.
DeGioia.
Dan Rhodes. Alan Howard. Jesus.
Diane. Not Diane?
Diane? Isn't Diane with two N's?
Yeah, I think that's Diane.
Not Deanne?
Well, maybe.
Eh, whatever. You know who you are.
I don't know.
You know who you are. I don't know. Our Lord and Savior Jesus keeps canceling and repledging so he gets his name read again. This is the last time, Jesus. Yeah. Do like 4 months in a row.
We'll say it every time, Jesus. Don't worry.
Michael Del Santo, Terry Chelton, and Deep Cover Canadian. Into what? The founders of Polybius, perhaps.
Must be. Ask them.
Anyways, thank you very much for supporting the show.
Hey, and you can, if you want some merch, you can head to alientheorist.com, hit the merch tab, go buy some dope merch. That's another way to support the show. And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.